Hello. How many of you have considered the spiritual side of acting? Well, voice acting, really. We touch on the spiritual side of all things on Mediva today with the inspirational John Osborne Hughes. No spirits included.
Well, I would love to welcome to the show today somebody who I met around a month ago who I feel is hugely inspiring and could also benefit you as an actor. Hello, John Osborne Hughes.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
Oh, welcome. It's very exciting to have you. I think I went on a short seminar course of yours in the spiritual psychology of acting, and it's described as Eastern philosophy meets Western psychology. How would you define, firstly, what it is that you as a kind of director, teacher do that you feel is a kind of more involved way of approaching acting?
Well, really, I teach acting. I mean, by background, I'm a director and actor myself, and my main focus is on training actors. And really, the spiritual psychology of acting is just acting. I just call it spiritual psychology of acting because it acknowledges the fact that there is a physical, spiritual, and psychological aspect to a human being. So the same applies in acting. And we look at all those three levels when it comes to a character. So really, it's just acting. It could just as easily be called acting, or just the common sense of acting.
Yes,
it's usually just using the laws that nature uses to create our own characters in life. The same psychological laws of cause and effect that nature uses in our everyday life. So it's really just the laws of nature, mm-hmm. which must be the ultimate acting technique.
Yes.
And we just basically look to understand what that technique is. First of all, how it applies in our own lives, because that's really how to understand it. And then to see how it works with a character. But what it does, it does encourage the actor to ask deeper questions about the character. And it also shows the actor what the fundamental questions are to ask about the character.
Mm-hmm. And then that's to depths, which I find most fascinating, that I think could really enhance people's understanding of how to develop something with realness to it, something with that natural flair that you can only see very little, really, I think, in a lot of performances that we're seeing today on various shows, on stage and on audio and visually as well. So how did you start off on this path of teaching? What's your route into this fun shindig?
Well, my background was with training with a teacher called Sam Cogan, who developed what he called a science of acting, which is highly disputable because it didn't work. I would call it more a kind of unproven hypothesis of acting rather than science of acting. But he'd picked up on the Russians and on Stanislavski. Obviously, he was Ukrainian and he trained at the Moscow Institute of Theatre Arts. So he developed a course which gave a great insight into what was going on with the Russian technique. And that's really their understanding as well, is you look into nature, you find out how nature does it, and you do the same. That's what Stanislavski was all about. But where it really fell flat was it became far too cerebral, and it denied just the natural feeling response of an actor. Mm. And it just didn't create good results. But without throwing the baby out with the bathwater, the basic framework, which are based on Stanislavski's elements of acting and his steps to creating a character, that framework is pretty perfect in many ways. So it was using the same framework or a similar framework, and just bringing more juice into it.
Yes, fantastic. Now, as far as the course I attended, you talked about sort of 10 elements of acting and how you would sort of build those into all the process to really give you that absolutely full and vibrant experience of creating that character. Do you want to talk about some of those?
Well, the elements are acting like the building blocks of the actor's craft. The elements of acting are things like imagination, freeing the body of tensions, psychological actions, purposes, causal thinking, inspiration, attention. And these are the building blocks of acting, really. They're actually the elements of acting are really, we look at one thing and one thing only, and that's thinking. How does thinking work? And we look at thinking from the point of view of imagination. We look at thinking from the point of view of attention. We look at thinking from the point of view of complex formation. That's the way that thoughts organize and group themselves in the mind. Mm-hmm. As you know, we look at that just in psychology, and the students are very much asked to reflect and see how this all plays out in their own lives. Mm-hmm. And then the second part of the course is the 10 steps to creating a character. Right. And this is a systematic step-by-step process that I've inherited and modified.
Through practical experience. I mean, you've taught all over the world, haven't you? Yes. So courses in New York and...
Well, I've taught a lot in America, not a lot in New York. I spent 9 years teaching about 3 months a year in New York and trained 6 groups of actors that did the whole course. So that was really where the spiritual psychology of acting was really developed and made big headway, you know, in its development during those times. And then I've spent some time teaching workshops in LA, about 10 of those I've done. But usually they're just one-off courses, you know, they'll be for like a 3 or 5 day course. And more recently in Berlin, I've been going to Berlin and teaching groups of actors there.
Superb. Keeping you busy. Good stuff. and just as part of the course that I went on, you hugely advocate kind of meditative techniques and yoga for preparation of work. Why do you feel that is important? What kind of are you aiming for?
Well, the meditation, actually, I think for an actor or for anybody, is key. Because, well, first of all, just on very simple terms, it's the best and most simple form of relaxation. Mm-hmm. But also it's the best way of training the actor's attention. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, literally the job of an actor is to go on stage or go on screen and, you know, as mm-hmm. as we do in life, just to think the thoughts of the character one after another without interruption. Now, that's no mean feat to be able to do that. And it requires a trained attention to be able to do that. And it requires an awareness to be able to do that, because you need the awareness, which, you know, is naturally cultivated through the practice of meditation. The awareness gives you the ability to see what's going on in the mind. And that gives a great power to the actor, because then they can remove whatever it is in their thinking processes, which is, in, you know, getting in the way of uh-huh. creating the character. Like, for example, you might have an actor, like I've had an actor recently that I've been working with, and he's good by all intents and purposes, he's very good, but he's got this huge need in his life to impress people. Right. He wants to impress all the time. His eyebrows are forever raising in a kind of mm-hmm. impressive, and it comes into his acting. This desire to impress people in life obviously comes into acting when he's in rehearsal. And it gives a kind of artificial veneer over what could be really good work if that can be removed. Mm-hmm. So it's helping, you know, in the training, it's helping the actor to develop the awareness to see those things mm-hmm. So that they can remove them. And meditation is a fantastic aid for that. But also, more importantly, the meditation helps to develop more inner light, as it were. Mm-hmm. The light of consciousness shines brighter when we meditate. And that's really what we would call charisma. Okay. Charisma comes from a Greek word, chromos, mm-hmm. which means color. And the first precondition of color is light. And which light is it? In one that's charismatic, one is one who is colorful. It's really, they're lit up from within. It's a light of consciousness. So I use an analogy with the students on the first day, which you'll have heard, which is if you imagine everybody is a lampshade, every individual is a lampshade, and they're all different. They've all got different qualities. They've all got different colours and patterns. If you were to put a little tea light, you know, a little candle behind that lampshade, it would illuminate the pattern to some degree and it would shine out. But if you were to put a 250-watt bulb behind the same lampshade,
Yes.
It would absolutely fill the room or the stage or the screen. And this is the inner light of consciousness. So I explained to them that the psychology of acting is the means of creating lampshades, these individual character forms. And the spiritual part is how to light up the inner being so that those character creations shine on stage. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we call, you know, the X factor or star quality. Stars shine. And what is it that shines? It's that inner light. And the meditation and spiritual or philosophical knowledge and discipline has been shown to be sort of the most economical and fruitful way to help an actor to get in touch with that. And it also helps to shed what's not important. You know, there's a dissolving to take place in meditation. That kind of inner light that builds up dissolves everything unlike itself. So it's hugely necessary for an actor, I think, meditation.
Yes. I mean, would you be so kind as to share with us a potential short meditation that folks could perhaps listen to and have a feel for what that might be like? Even though we're in audio, I'm sure it still works beautifully.
Well, you know, the key to it is just listening. And it's really, meditation is just giving an object for the mind to connect with so that the activity in the mind can fall still.
Sure.
The ultimate aim of the meditation is complete stopping of the mind, is the cessation of the mind. But if you try to stop the mind of its own accord, it's not possible. But if you give the mind an object to rest upon and you just gently keep returning to that object with some patience and gentleness, then the mind settles down. So the simplest thing to do is just to get the body straight. It's always useful to have a straight back in meditation because there are subtle energies that move up and down the spine. So it's better not to have any kinks in the spine. So I would say to get the crown of the head directly over the perineum. That's the root chakra. So it's the crown chakra over the root chakra. The perineum's the bit between the anus and the genitals. And you just get those two in line as if they're a couple of discs. And that's the right posture. And it's there's a kind of weightlessness, a buoyancy, when you find that sort of central point.
Okay. So settle yourselves in now, folks. Get yourselves kind of sat comfortably. Think about the position.
It starts with posture. The first port of call into the world of meditation is asana, which means steadily held pose. And all that's important is that just the body is relaxed and soft and that the spine is straight. So you get the spine straight. And then close the eyes.
What's best to do with your hands?
Just to have the hands just rested upright on the lap, as if you're kind of open to receive. Seems like a nice position. Mm-hmm. And just relax the hands. And then just take a deep breath. And on the exhalation, just let everything go. And then take another very deep breath. And whatever remains, just let that go as well. So just bring the body under observation. So feel it as a whole. And then be aware of the space of the mind. That little space between the ears, behind the eyes, where all the thoughts you've ever thought have ever taken place. But rather than being interested in the various forms of the mind, the thoughts, the pictures, the impressions, be interested in the light of the mind. So if this were the inside of a cinema, rather than being interested in the pictures on the screen, being interested in the light of the screen, and ultimately being aware of the bulb in the lamp of the projector, which is yourself, which is the light of yourself. And then let the eyes just settle on the center of the screen. And let the attention drop down to the space in the center of the chest, in the region of the heart. And be aware of the presence there. And then just simply breathe into the heart. Take nice, long, slow, deep breaths into the heart. And then be aware of the feeling of aliveness which permeates the whole body. So every cell is alive and, as it were, lit with consciousness. And then the simplest way to come into the present is to connect with the senses. So as if for the very first time, feel the body weight on the chair. Feel the feet on the floor. Feel the clothes touching the skin. Taste. Be aware of smells. And then just relax the brain completely. Relax the face. Just let everything go soft. And then come to the listening. Relax the inner ears. And just be aware of whatever sounds are outside. And just gently connect with them. And then let that hearing expand. Go out to the distance, the furthest, faintest sounds. And then go further still, right out to the silence beyond the sound. And then allow the silence beyond and the silence within to join and be one. And rest in the peace of yourself, here present.
Superb, thank you. So, yeah, I hope you have taken part in that. And I don't know if meditation is a part of your life as an actor. And if it isn't, maybe start to consider adding it into your daily routine. Because I think the centering and that time to just, I guess, acknowledge to be is...
Well, it also, you know, it brings the being to stillness. And we always hear about great actors and what wonderful stillness they have. And this stillness is presence. You think, well, what is it that gives a person presence, mm-hmm. or gives an actor or a person in life presence? It's the fact they bring you into the present. Mm-hmm. And how do they bring you into the present? Because they're in the present themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
So the discipline for the actor, and this is ongoing for life. You know, this isn't just for the times when you're getting ready to perform. This is the discipline for life that you can deepen this practice by practicing the meditation. And I recommend in the morning, in the evening, just 5-10 minutes at first, just to sit down and just to connect ultimately with stillness and silence. That everything else is leading to that. But then also just in daily life. To just, you've got a choice every moment. Do you just carry on indulging in the same daydream? Mm. Or do you connect with this ever-present moment, right. and thereby all the potential possibilities that are contained within it or lead from it? And that's an ongoing choice that all of us have every moment of our lives, of our waking lives at least. So we can always just practice just connecting with what's in front of us, mm-hmm. using the senses. You know, if we're walking down the street, we can walk down the street having a conversation or an argument in our head or rehearsing something in our head. Or we can actually feel our feet on the floor and feel the breeze on our skin, mm-hmm. and actually smell the smells and let the eyes meet the forms that are in front. And this brings to it, this kind of practice brings a sense of ease to the actor, and that's what they need. Even if they have to create very tense characters, yeah. the actor themselves has a sense of ease. In fact, this is one of the qualities of an actor, according to Michael Chekhov, was a sense of ease. Mm-hmm. That very much comes from being in the present. We call the present the fearless, desireless present. And that's where the light of consciousness is. That's where the magic is. So it's part of the ongoing discipline of an actor, I think, is to just train the mind to come into the present.
I mean, and that exercise took a couple of minutes. And I think, you can afford that time out of your day, no matter what your day is like. And I have been trying very hard to keep to that. And I do feel very different about perspectives in some respects. So yes, I think if you can, then try to make that part of your world at least 2 times a day. I think you advocated specific times of day as well, didn't you? Just as being the most.
Yeah. The ideal traditionally is between the half an hour before sunrise and the half an hour before sunset. That's an hour period. So any time within that period, or the same with the sunrise. So either way, yep. depending on your schedule. But the important thing is to do it twice a day. Mm-hmm. It's just to have that discipline to sit down, even if it's a short amount of time. Because you think, well, which comes first, the physical, the psychological, or the spiritual? Mm-hmm. Surely the spiritual is the basis of everything. Mm-hmm. It's the basis of the mind, and the mind's the basis of the body. So the first thing, if you were a gardener and you were looking after a tree, you'd water its roots. You wouldn't just water its branches. You'd water it deep at the roots. And that's what the meditation brings. Yes.
And I advocate it hugely. I think it's hugely important. And also, those who have studied Stanislavski for whatever courses and degrees and things you've been on, I think, that whole point of focus and rest and being sort of in that neutral phase of understanding where to start from is fascinating.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, and Stanislavski very much understood that. And Stanislavski understood that there was a spiritual aspect to acting, as did Michael Chekhov. They were both understood that there was a spiritual aspect to it, but they didn't really understand how to apply it. And that's just simply due to a lack of knowledge. I've been lucky enough to live in a time where there are certain teachings that, have come from the Himalayas, etc., that are far more accessible now if you seek them out. than they were, you know, back in those times. You know, all that knowledge of India that's come from India has only really been available on the plains of Europe for the last 100 years or so. So for Stanislavski, that wasn't really available to him, but that's available now. So that's really why that we can, you know, a spiritual psychology of acting is very much something of today.
Yes, I mean, when you if you attend this course, you talk about the mind triads, and they come from a specific kind of place of teaching, don't they? I don't know if you want to elaborate on
that. Yes, things. Well, the mind triad is my own development. That's come from, it's developed from the teachings I was given, but actually forming it into a simple structure. Basically, it's the character's most important thought. Mm-hmm. The triad means three, obviously, and it's the three most important or fundamental or essential aspects of the character, or the essence, or the roots of the character. And they are the what we call the character's super image, which an image is a thought, and a super image is a fundamental thought. The most fundamental thought, and the most fundamental thought that anybody has, is who they think they are. It's what we call their self-image. So the character's super-image is always a self-image. So it's always, I am something. And this will often be what the character is out to cover up, right, or what the character wants to disprove. You know, but often, if you know, for example, if you have a character who's poor, he wants to be rich. Or if you have a character that has an inferiority complex, they might compensate for it with a desire to be superior, which brings us on to our super purpose. It's the second element of the mind triad. It's called the super purpose. And this is the overall aim of the character. This is what the character thinks will make them happy in life. Mm-hmm. These aren't things like I want a new car, or I want a new pair of shoes, or a husband or a wife, etc. These are things like I want to be admired, I want to have a peaceful life, I want to be undiscovered, or I want to be respected, or I want to be liked, or I want to be adored. That these are the more, that very often in everyday life, these are the less visible, less conscious reasons why people do things, but mm-hmm. in acting we need to start understanding how these processes work to, you know, to mm-hmm. do it well and engage these things, and that requires some awareness to, and it requires the actor to see how that works themselves. So the actor would first of all look at what's their own self-image. How did that self-image get into their head in the first place? What were the events and circumstances from childhood, from the past, that formulated those ideas? And what are those ideas? And how do they create the desires? How do they create the purposes, which are really there to counterbalance?
It's almost acting as counselling as well, in a way, in as much as you are taking apart yourself. Yeah.
Oh, very much so. Acting turns out to be a great source of counselling for people who embark on it properly, because really, you know, whatever holds you back from acting well in the scene, whatever the psychological process is, like your own inferiority complex, your own addiction to being liked or adored by other people, or whatever those things are that stop you from acting well, they're the same things that generally stop you from living well.
Right.
So in dealing with those things within the context of an acting class, of course, it's exactly the same thing in life. So the students find that there's a tremendous disenburdening that takes place through this process. And disenburdenment is enlightenment. Mm-hmm. There's enlightenment that comes. You know, if you're wearing a heavy backpack of ideas that you hold about yourself and unnecessary desires, which are all over the place, yeah, and then suddenly you get an opportunity to put them all down, well, that's disemburdenment and that's enlightenment. Mm. So the general feeling with the students is they leave feeling, well, if they don't leave on you know, they come on Saturday morning, they leave on Sunday, we do 2-day workshop. Yes. If they aren't leaving with bright eyes, bushy tails, a big smile on their face, then I'm not doing my job properly. Right. It's not to say that sometimes it isn't challenging, You know, some of the things that come up from time to time are challenging to the students. The things that they see in themselves, some of the things they see, they'd rather not. But there's initially they'd rather not. But there's a kind of, because of this basic general atmosphere of the meditation and the spiritual knowledge. And the spiritual knowledge tells us that the self is already whole, complete, and perfect. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need any modification. It doesn't need any improvement. The mind might have some silly ideas in it, but the self, the witness, you know, the conscious being, is already whole, complete, and perfect. Mm-hmm. And through the meditation, you come, and through coming back to that sense of being whole, complete, and perfect, which you get through the meditation, it's a lot easier then to look at the mind and look what's going on in a much less personal and precious way, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
It gives people greater discrimination, and it gives people a sense of stepping back, the meditation, and they can deal with it a lot easier. Yeah. It's a bit like if you imagine you've got a goldfish bowl on your head, yeah, and you've got goldfish swimming all around you. That's one experience. Or imagine now you're just looking into a fish tank and you're observing the fish. That's the difference between, you know, before and after meditation.
Right. Yes. Yes. Beautiful. I love your analogies. I mean, a lot of people ask me and other folks to do with this particular medium of acting, regards to preparing for casting roles and then also dealing with that whole rejection part of acting, which, you know, does happen to everybody, and those little nagging voices of like, am I good enough? What could I do?
That's what I'm going to let you into a little secret. And the first little secret is that I've been training actors for 26 years now, on both sides of the Atlantic, extensively. And actors that, you know, everything from, you know, Britain's highest paid actor to people just doing community theatre and, you know, theatre and education, this kind of thing. Also, all scale of actor, Hollywood actors, West End actors, Broadway actors, the whole lot. I've taught them all. And one thing I found in every single actor I've ever taught is they all have a secret fear when they enter into it that they might not be very good. Even if they've had praises heaped on them at drama school, or they've succeeded early, there's this nagging little thought, and it's a kind of existential insecurity that an actor faces. And that's this little thought that, well, perhaps I'm not very good at this. Perhaps I'm rubbish. And it's good to acknowledge that, because then the actor can step over it. Yeah. And really, what makes an actor not so good? There's only two things that stop an actor from being his or her very best. And that's a lack of knowledge. And, you know, the knowledge is certainly available, but, you know, many actors go into it and they live a life of fear because they always had a sense, they were blagging it, that they never actually learnt the actual concrete profession of being an actor, you know, in the same way as you'd learn if you trained as an engineer or if you trained as an architect, you'd learn the laws of that profession and how the job is done, what the elements of it are, and what the step-by-step process of doing any job is. Actors aren't supplied with that at drama school. They don't come out of drama school with that. It's a very much a case of, well, you know, either you like the performance or you don't. It's very subjective. So the first thing is a lack of knowledge. That will give an actor a great amount of anxiety about his work and a fear of being discovered for not being very good, which will kill his spontaneity, you know, and that's what you don't want to happen. Right. And the other thing that gets in the way is the actor's ego. And by that, I mean the positive and negative. The ideas that the actor holds about themselves, that the egotistic desire to be center of attention that the acting brings, to be special, to feel superior, or to be respected or acknowledged, or any of, you know, adored by the public, or any of these purposes that a successful career in acting can bring people. Mm-hmm. And also the self-rejection is part of ego as well. The feelings of not being good enough and the feelings of being bad, or feelings of guilt or residual guilt, of all of these things. This is the other big obstacle to the actor's process, because all this unfinished business in the back of the mind is, as it were, taking up megabytes of space in the mind. And to be an actor, you want your desktop clear. You know, you want your computer to be running, to be running well. You don't want any clutter.
Optimum. Yes. Yeah.
So you need to close down those files that aren't serving you anymore. So one of the things we provide on the course is through the meditation, it brings what we call satsanga, which is Sanskrit for good company. So it's like fertile ground. And in good company, in the good company of the course, all those good seeds that are within a person start to flourish and come alive. And all the bad seeds that are within a person start to wither and die. Obviously, in bad company, the opposite is true. But the course aims to provide good company for the students, a place of nurturing and support.
Right. I can feel that. I think even in the short few hours I spent with you and those other students on that course day, it was less sort of practical, but how you were speaking about the kind of underlying point of how you approach acting, I think was really inspiring. So I think it is definitely worth perhaps pursuing some more adventures with the spiritual side of things. With regards to people creating, there are certain ways that you also kind of encourage people to think about designing that character. Four key questions, I think, were the basis for something you spoke to us about. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I was going to say as well, but about the casting. With the art of casting, and you're asking about rejection as well, it's really, success in acting is really down to your ability to audition. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. if you can get the job, the rest follows from there. But if you can't get the job, then nothing ever takes off. Mm-hmm. So it's most important to learn the fine art and science of auditioning, and to get the right mindset. And the simple first principle is that you play the match, not the tournament.
Right.
Now, the tournament is the gig, is getting the TV show or the run in the West End or the National Theatre gig or whatever. It's getting the gig and all that comes with that. And obviously, those things very often, they're life-changing experiences. So obviously, we want them. We want those to happen. But then if you go in with that purpose, you're scattered too wide and you're not in control.
Right.
Of that situation. You're not in control of whether or not you're going to get the job. So you're going to experience some anxiety and fear, which again is going to kill your spontaneity, and you're not going to be able to shine like the star that you know you are. So the trick is to play the match and not the tournament. Now, the match is having a relaxed audition.
Yes.
So when you approach the audition, the best thing to do is to say to yourself, when I go to the audition tomorrow or Thursday or whenever it is, I'm going to relax. I mean, so much just follows from that. Just mm-hmm. relax. Come into the present. Well, we know how to do that. You connect with the senses. Come out of the mind, you connect with the senses immediately. Boof, there you are in the present. Everything lights up. And I'm going to enjoy the audition.
Yeah, 100%.
Going to relax. Come into the present and enjoy the audition. I have nothing to prove to anyone, least of all myself. But the usual condition is I have everything to prove to everybody, most of all myself. But we need to arrive at the position where you have nothing to prove. Really, what you're doing when you go to an audition is you're offering a service.
Mm-hmm.
So take the me out of it. Take the what's in it for me attitude out of it, if you possibly can, and go there with an attitude of how can I help? And really what you're saying is, right, here I am. I'm an actor. I have a certain look, a certain way, and they have a part to fulfill. Does this actor meet this part? Now, you don't know that. You don't know what they're looking for. Very often they don't quite know what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a question of horses for courses, in acting to some degree. Yeah. But what you do have a control of, is your attitude. In fact, that's the same as in life. You don't have control over the events that are going to take place in your life. You can have some influence, but really in the grand scheme of things, it's very little. But what you have all power over is your attitude, is how you approach those things.
Yes.
So if you get your attitude to just being an attitude of service, because ultimately that's what it is. It is an act of love and service, great acting. Mm-hmm. You're creating the character for the delight and instruction of the audience, you know, to uplift the audience. Yes. And it might be the darkest of characters, but that might be what's necessary to the story, you know?
Yes.
So you create the character beautifully, and it's having that basic ethic of service takes the ball, well, or puts the ball in your court rather than in their court, because you're all about what can you give.
Yes.
And if you understand that, you know, it is a numbers game, really, with casting, and it is a question of horses for courses, and there are so many factors that are not in your control, well, then it's best to cultivate an attitude through, and this is through your life's work, really, as an actor, an attitude of detachment. Mm-hmm. And an attitude of being content to rest in yourself.
Yes.
If you walk into a room and you're absolutely desperate for the job and you're dependent on it, then you feel lots of fear and it kills your spontaneity. But if you walk into the room and you've been meditating and you're at rest in yourself, and when you meet the casting director and the director, etc., they're not these superior people contriving to keep you out of the industry. That actually they're just the people at work wanting you to be the person that they cast. You know, they want the game to be over. They want it to be you. In fact, the casting director wants it that there are so many good actors that they're offering the director. The director doesn't know which one to choose. So they want you to succeed. They want you to be good.
Yes.
So you go in there and you acknowledge the real self in them.
Yep.
That isn't superior, that isn't inferior, that is just really just yourself in another form. And you go in there and you share and you ask them what to do without any attachment or expectation. This is very difficult, I know. And then leave and you just take a deep breath and you let it all go and you get on with your life. And then if it's for you, it won't go by.
I absolutely love that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely brilliant. And yeah, I mean, one of the key things you said there is like, that person is just you in another form, and you go into great detail in that on the day's course.
Yeah.
And I think that perspective on things just changes so much. Oh, I feel
absolutely.
I've always thought in my own philosophy of my own understanding of my particular life, I've just always felt that we are all children, you know. And I remember being at a table with my 70-something-year-old auntie, and she said that she was like 22 inside. And from that moment, I thought, yeah, actually, and I am too. I think I've stayed inside as that kind of vibrant, ready for anything, 22-year-old with this slightly more aging physical body.
Well, of course, so then you realize through the meditation, of course, it's only the body that ages. It's mm-hmm. been the same self that's always been there. There's not an atom of your body that was there, well, maybe some in your teeth, that was there 7 years ago.
Yes,
renewal. Still called you, so you mm-hmm. can't be your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that one, the one who has a body, who witnesses the body, or the one who, you know, thinks with the mind but isn't a thought, hears with the ears and isn't a sound, can see with the eyes but isn't a form, that's yourself, and that's yeah. eternal. And the more in yeah. touch with that an actor is, the more of a universal sense that they have, you know. In a great actor, you look at, I always think of Al Pacino, like, why can't right. I take my eyes off him when he's on screen? I can't take my eyes off him. Even he's just always, he's completely in it.
Yeah.
And do you see what I mean? What is it that's evoking that? There's a universality. It's like I know him. And it's not just because I've seen him in other films. There's a he kind of oozes humanity. That's what you find in great actors. And what is that? That's unity. It's an actor who's sort of been able to step back and get in contact with the underlying unity of everything. They hold that universality in their heart when they go on stage, and that unites.
Yes, it's the balance, isn't it? And I absolutely loved how you brought that down to what called the three guna, which I think is wonderful. That whole essence of balance and. And if one thing is slightly more than the other, then that can change everything considerably. But maybe that's for people to find out from your book and your course, I feel.
The guna is ancient. The guna is written about extensively in all the ancient Hindu teachings, and it goes into it in depth in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, which is the kind of cream of the sort of Hindu teachings. Mm. It goes into that, and it's just the guna are just the three fundamental constituents of this creation. They're the three, if you like, the primary colors out of which everything else is made. Mm. And they're basically tamas, which is the heavy stuff, that's inertia. When it's in the mind, it's ignorance. Rajas, which is where we got our English word rage, and that's activity, passion, energy, all energy is rajas. Mm-hmm. And sattva, which is purity. And every state of mind, a state of being, is a mixture of these three. They're all three available all the time. They're all always constantly there, and they're constantly changing. But they have a different effect on consciousness. So that the tamas, the heavy particles, they absorb consciousness. The rajas, that's the energy particles, they reflect consciousness. And the sattva, that conducts consciousness. Like copper is a good conductor of electricity. Sattva in the being conducts more consciousness. Mm. And so the guna are useful to an actor because understanding how they work in life gives us some, it is possible to have some control over these guna, and certainly to increase the amount of sattva through certain means, through spiritual practices, attention, etc. Mm. More, we get more of the sattva so that the being lights up more. That's the idea, really. It's rather like a copper that conducts electricity. I suppose rajas would be steel and tamas would be lead. And the beautiful thing about the meditation, of course, is that it dissolves the tamas. Mm. It settles the agitation and the rajas and the busyness in the mind. And it produces these wonderful fine sattvic particles.
Yes.
And they open everything up and bring space and light within.
Yeah.
And purify. It's rather like having a bath. You know, we have a shower or a bath, wash the outside of the body and it feels fresh. But really a meditation is like a shower or a bath for the inner organs.
Yes. Yes, and having that those moments of clarity for creativity is also, you know, a lot of folks that I work with are not just actors but writers as well. And, you know, those moments will enable perhaps, you know, more time for proper true creativity to be able to have a chance to filter through this crazy
Absolutely.
World.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, the ultimate creator, the ultimate artist is consciousness itself.
Uh-huh.
And you could say that the, you know, the level of consciousness of a work of art is in direct proportion to the level of consciousness of the artist or artists that created it. So really the first port of call for any artist is to have some means of raising their own level of consciousness. Ultimately, I think that theatre art and cinematic art, which I think are in many ways the ultimate art forms because they include all the other arts, cinematic and theatrical art, their main purposes are to raise the level of consciousness, to open the heart.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, it's a very important thing, is to open the hearts of those who find it difficult to open their own or have forgotten how to open their own. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, to hold a mirror up to nature, as Shakespeare put it.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that, you know, we have to obviously to be a great actor, if they're the three purposes, we need to find a means to raise our own level of consciousness, open our own heart and remove whatever might be blocking that, whatever ideas are getting in there that are limiting us or limiting the expansion of the heart, and also to hold a mirror up to nature, to look at nature. The duty of an artist is to observe nature. The duty of an actor is to observe human nature. And to observe is not to criticize, is to see it for what it is without criticism or judgment, just to observe. And so that's really what an actor needs to cultivate, if they're really the purposes of the art form itself, you know?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and I love the quote you used, that we can change the world by changing ourselves.
Oh, well, so that's a very old one, that one. Yeah, we can change this world by changing ourselves.
Yeah.
I remember there was an anarchist punk band from the 1980s from Leeds called Chumbawamba. They used to say that, we can change this world by changing ourselves.
But and yet I think with regards to sort of the playfulness of things as well, I think it is about capturing that essence of you. And I think one of the other things that you explored was, like, as a kid, what did you play on your own? And about the purpose of play is for enjoyment. And so you have talked about joy and enjoying and being in the moment. And I think, you know, that for me is definitely, I love an audition. I go in definitely with that feeling of, like, this could be fun. I'm going to just do what I can with what I can think of doing, play around with whatever words has been thrown at me, and yeah, just enjoy that process. And as you said, we kind of act for the same reason, for enjoyment and capturing those moments of bliss, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, I think that's the measure. I you know, as I did when you came, I ask all students to ask themselves, or just to remember when they were children and they used to play on their own, or with a you know, a few other children maybe, particularly the play on our own. Though, what did we play? What, and can we remember those moments of playing in the back garden, or, you know, when we were children? And just to really go back in the imagination and revisit those moments and get in touch with those moments. Because when we were doing that, we were just playing to enjoy and to find out about what we're playing. We were just there. We didn't need to win an Oscar. We didn't need a round of applause. We didn't need to be told that we were marvelous. We were just playing. And really, you know, there's this wonderful Sanskrit word, lila. It means the play or the dance. And in the Hindu teaching, it's described that the universe itself is the play, the lila of the absolute, is the dance of the absolute, is the dance of universal consciousness. And the purpose of it is to play and to discover itself. So if you can get back to that simple sense of play you had with as a child, and use that as a point of reference, a kind of measure when you approach the acting, you know, even if you are playing, you know, Satan himself, it still has to be played. There's still a spirit of play in that. And that makes all the difference. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to allow the sort of grace and spontaneity of the moment to come in. You know, that's what Stanislavski was all about. He was all about creating a conscious technique to facilitate subconscious creativity, so that, you know, or what every artist wants is they want the subconscious creativity. But how do you get it? And what Stanislavski understood was, well, you know, you need a conscious technique. You need a way to springboard, as it were, into the scene. And that's what the spiritual psychology of acting is, really. It's a means of springboarding you into it, so that you can just live the life of the character and think the thoughts of the character organically. It's the creative process of how you get from basically receiving the script to that point.
Yes. I mean, I would hugely advocate jumping in, if you can, wherever you are in the world, find John and his courses. You're doing another London seminar, aren't you, as an introduction?
Yeah, I'm doing a one-day introductory seminar at Evolve, which is on Stockwell Road. But if you look on my website, which is spiritualpsychologyofacting.com, or look me up, John Osborne Hughes, that will lead you to the website. And yeah, you can book it on there. It's £65 for the day.
Bargain.
And it's full day, and there's a full list of all the topics that we go through during those day, that day, some of which we've touched on today.
Yeah. No, I would hugely advocate that as a, you know, an extra important thing to consider as part of your development as an actor. You know, we are all always trying to improve our practice, always trying to improve ourselves, and I think this course is wonderful. And developed beyond that, you've got your pod groups that meet once a month. Which sadly currently I can't jump in on, but one day I do. Can you tell us a bit about what's involved with that?
Well, any one time I've got two groups in London, one a senior and one a junior group. So one really is a first year group and the other is a third year group. So one group that's been going 3 years, but it's only one weekend a month. So we're one of them's a third year group, and the third year group are currently preparing for a showcase performance. So we've chosen the scenes, we've analysed the scenes, and now we're rehearsing the scenes ready for a showcase. But that's not until March that'll go on.
Now that's at the Actors Centre, in London.
That's going to be at the Actors Centre. I need to contact them. And some other venues as well. I'm thinking of doing it more than once. We do all that work and then only show it once or twice. To put on a little show maybe in the evening somewhere.
Yeah. So if you want to go on to tour near you, get in contact.
And then I've got a junior group, a first year group, who they're looking at the elements of acting and the 10 steps to creating a character at the moment.
Superb. So if that sounds like something exciting, I think it's worth the jump, don't you? But yes, huge thank yous, John, for coming on today. I think that's been hugely helpful. And I think, you know, if people haven't made time to think about that aspect, if you're new to acting, perhaps haven't done any other courses, I think it's definitely worth having a look at this specific one. Just to enhance your awesomeness, your essence as an actor, as a voice actor, I think it'd be hugely valuable. So thank you very much, John. Parting shot of advice to anybody jumping in an actor, what would you suggest is one of the best things they could do?
I think the most important thing you can do is to, the one thing you have control of is to nurture yourself. Is to act regularly, you know, get involved in classes, get involved with your friends, make something, you know, you can make a simple film on your iPhone now.
Yeah.
You can make it and edit it and, you know, and do effects on it in your iPhone. So to get on, just to keep doing it, to keep practice. And if you get a job, do it to your best ability, because I've seen a lot of students go through their whole career and they've started just playing a small part in a fringe theatre show and doing that well, and then getting offered a medium sized part in a fringe theatre show, and then that going well, and then being offered a lead part in a fringe theatre show, and then that leading to a show at the Bush, to the National Theatre and beyond, just through, you know, getting in there and working, because you're just always better off working if you get the opportunity, because you get to meet people and you get to practice and you forge relationships. And that's really important in the acting industry, is the relationships that you create. And if you go into it remembering that everyone you meet is actually just yourself in another form, you'll create good relationships wherever you go.
Superb. I absolutely adore. All your teachings have been marvellous. So thank you very much for what you've added into my acting world. And I hope other people are so inspired as well to take a look and jump in. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.